thank you for tuning into the 14th episode of The Virtual Couch. I'm your host, Tony Overbay. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified mindful habit coach, writer, speaker, husband, father of four, ultra marathon runner, and creator of The Path Back. The Path Back is an online pornography addiction recovery program that is helping people reclaim their lives from pornography addiction. If you or somebody that you know is struggling with pornography addiction or compulsive sexual behavior, please point them to pathbackrecovery.com. There you can download a short ebook that describes five common mistakes that people make when trying to overcome pornography addiction. Again, that's pathbackrecovery.com. And I just want to thank you again for your support, Apple Podcast app and iTunes listeners. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. The ratings continue to grow, and I'm still just as puzzled as ever as how the reviews work. I've literally sat in front of a friend who wrote a review on her phone and submitted the review over a week ago, and it's not there on iTunes. But I also know of another listener who had written me just a couple of days ago, and they shared actually the review that they posted, and it was there in a matter of minutes. But regardless, I don't want you to think that I am obsessed with the reviews and ratings, but that is how iTunes decides who they feature. And if you get featured, then you're put in front of literally millions of eyes, and millions of eyes will bring me even more interesting people to interview, which in turn hopefully brings you more content that can hopefully give you tools and insight to change your life for the better. It is that simple. So if you take a moment to subscribe, rate, review, spread the word, that would be wonderful. And of course, you can also head over to virtualcouch.xyz for all the podcast episode as well, for those of you non-iPod or iTunes or Apple podcast listeners. And there you can also make a small donation if you'd like to help keep the podcast growing. Before we get started today, though, with my interview, I kind of wanted to bring things just quickly back to, there was another shooting yesterday. I'm recording this on a Monday morning on November the 6th, and yesterday at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. At this point, there are 26 confirmed dead and another 15 or so wounded, and of course, I hope the collective prayers of the world and the thoughts go toward that city, that congregation, and all those who were affected. But I go back to, I had recorded a podcast episode just a few hours after the shooting in Las Vegas a month or so ago. And at that time, I just felt impressed to record a quick episode on speaking with your kids about tragedy. And unfortunately, as we're seeing more and more of these events occur, this is truly a passion of mine that it's imperative that you are there for your kids at these crossroads, if and when they come to you to try to process some of these things, especially as they kind of hear more and more about this in their lives. And I want to make sure that you have the patience to listen to them. Don't shut them down. Don't tell them that their questions or their thought processes are wrong or bad or dumb, but please be there for them. Listen to them. Have empathy. And I realize I'm probably talking to people that that makes perfect sense to, but I am surprised at the number of teenagers that I get a chance to interact with, you know, and not even just teenagers, but if your spouse comes to you or coworkers come to you, listen, learn empathy. Just because you have a thought or experience around tragedy doesn't mean that that's the right one or that everyone else's is wrong in turn. So everybody processes tragedy a bit differently, and just now is not the time to tell somebody that the way that they process it is wrong. So if it would help, go back and listen to that episode. I am so grateful for the feedback that I've received from that episode and how it has given a few parents maybe a little better understanding of how to communicate with their children and teens. So enough on that. But I appreciate I appreciate those of you who have let me know that has changed a little bit of the dynamic in speaking with their kids and their teens. Okay, onto a more upbeat note. Today's guest is Dr. Sean Davis, and Sean is somebody who I would consider a friend. I've run into him many times over the years. He's here local. I've attended a couple of trainings that he's given, and I've sent friends and clients his way, and all to rave reviews. And I really do mean that. And we have many mutual friends who are also wonderful people. So I've just always considered him a friend as well. And I hope to use that friendship to have him on more often because this was an amazing interview. And so before we get to it, first, let me just give you a little bit about Dr. Sean Davis. So Dr. Davis received his master's degree in marriage and family therapy from BYU, and then he received a doctorate in philosophy from Virginia Tech, which I thought was pretty unique. When I saw that he was Dr. Sean Davis, I assumed that that doctorate was in psychology, or a PsyD as they call it in the business, but instead I learned that he had a doctorate in philosophy. He's a full professor at Alliant University. He runs a very successful practice with offices both in Roseville, California, just down the road from my office, which we're right here out of Sacramento. And he has an office in Palo Alto, California, down in the Bay Area. So you can find out more about Dr. Davis and his practice, what he does, at thedavisgroup.org, thedavisgroup.org. Now, Sean has written books, he's lectured, he's taught around the world, and is just one of the most pleasant, approachable guys that I think I've ever met. And I had actually asked him to just send over a quick list of his books and publications, that type of thing, before the interview. It's his curriculum of CV, that I asked him to send over, and it covered 21 pages. Again, and yet he is one of the most humble guys for as accomplished as he is in my field. I just thought I would take a quick peek at it between clients before he came in last week. And man, just scrolling through, and he has written books. He has written so many articles and co-authored so many articles, and just intense, deep research, as well as things that are put at a layman's level. I mean, he's kind of done a little bit of everything, and I didn't realize the extent of where he has lectured and taught classes. It's been all over the world. And so I'm just, I'd reached out to Sean a couple of years ago when I first started thinking about creating a podcast, and he was just as gracious then. He was all on board and was willing to come. And I had to wait this long to get him on here because he has an incredibly busy schedule. So I was so, so happy that he could come in here. But I asked him on this episode to kind of talk a little bit about working with couples, some of the things that he sees come up in working with couples and couples therapy, things that could possibly benefit my virtual couch listeners. And I have to tell you, the neat part about this was, with about 5 minutes left, I started to wrap things up. And then Sean mentioned that he had hoped to talk a little bit about rebuilding trust in relationships. And he made a couple of points in particular there at the end of this episode that I literally used several times that very day in my own practice. Sean is incredibly funny. There are so many good stories that I think people will enjoy, as well as a lot of good information. And I don't think that Sean even realized how funny he is, because as you'll hear, we get toward the end of the interview and he's worried that he hasn't delivered, that there isn't enough meat in the episode. But I gave it a quick listen through again, and I believe you'll find there is a lot of good information in this interview, along with some great stories from somebody who is, he's kind of a big deal in my industry. So truly was a get, and was hilarious, and also just give some really good advice on couples counseling. And I'm going to get him back for some of the other areas that he talks about as well. Get him back. That sounded like, I'm going to get that guy back, but I'm going to get him back in here to talk about some other things. So without any further delay, and of course, thanks in advance to the wonderful Aurora Florence for her song, It's Wonderful, that finishes off the end of each and every Virtual Couch podcast, on to my interview with Dr. Sean Davis. I got to run to the bathroom really fast.
Right.
And I just washed my hands. I'm coming back in. And do you have a bathroom philosophy? I mean, so if I come back in and my hands are wet and there's my client,
yeah.
Do you go on in and shake because that might be a little creepy? Or do you let them know I just washed my hands? Or
I do think about, I will usually say, I just washed my hands. Don't worry.
Okay.
But it is very, I'm conscious of it. Yeah. I'm aware.
It's funny, right? Yeah. And just yesterday I did that, and a guy said to me, oh, do you have like a germ thing? And I'm like, no, I don't, but I think that you might, so I don't want this to be creepy.
Should we talk about that? Yeah.
So in your office, I'm curious, okay, now we're going deep into, who would have known we would start the Virtual Couch podcast with Dr. Sean Davis talking about bathroom?
It is always awkward just standing next at the urinal.
That's okay. So we have an upstairs. Okay. So we all here in their clinic.
Right.
If I'm walking out and I just saw a male client, I'm going upstairs.
Right.
Because I do not want to.
Yeah. I try to, but sometimes I don't have enough time. Or sometimes that one's cleaning. They're cleaning that one all the time for some reason.
Okay.
So, yeah. And it's always awkward. It is. What do you do?
It is. And then I notice the therapist in me, I think that people, there's a great deal of the whole germophobia.
Right.
I mean, if you look in our bathroom here, I swear, first of all,
do we really want to go down the path? I was just saying, no one ever flushes, right? And then I've gone in there a couple times, and I got people doing like contortionist acts, trying to get the thing open with their foot or the
Know. There's like, it's one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
I had a professor in grad school who would not wash his hands. And so we knew this just from, we're all dudes, right? And
so,
he would not wash his hands. And so we had a code, a system. We had class in this little conference room, and which direction, whenever he would go in, one of the guys would go in too. And then we'd come out in whichever direction the guy moved the Kleenex box.
Oh,
if it was pointing at this wall, he washed. If it was pointing at the other wall.
Okay. Are you, I mean, we don't need names, of course, but is this a man been outed before? Or is this the first time the story is being
told?
No,
I think this is, you're the intro.
I feel privileged. Look at this, 2-3 minutes into this. I brought Dr. Davis in to talk about, like, guys, he is an extensive, his CV is, I think it's 11 or 12 pages with two on a page. I think it's 21 pages long of all of his publications and books and research. And then we start out with a deep dive into the toilet habits of the therapist.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. I feel like you're going to think, really, okay. So my guest is Dr. Sean Davis. I have known Sean. Do you prefer to go by Dr. Sean?
Sean is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I do. Okay. And we will get to some really good topics. I want to talk about couples therapy. I want to talk about some of your experiences there. But I used to joke all the time I wanted a PhD just so I could put doctor on my checks. Do you?
It's pretty cool. I will use it when I go to like the rental car counter or something where I need to like swing a little weight around. I don't know that it actually works, but I kind of got over it like a year in. You know, when I first defended my dissertation and all that, I was like, doctor everywhere. It was super annoying. Right.
Okay.
So, now I'm over it. I don't care. Call me Sean.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know that. Yeah, but I notice you are wearing a lab coat and you have a stethoscope. Is that kind of normal attire?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, okay. It's in my pajamas.
Okay. All right. That's my last bit. I will get very serious. But I used to think though it would be kind of fun if I did just want a lab coat to wear.
Yeah.
Or I wanted to wear scrubs. I used to, growing up, I used to think, well, I'll be a doctor until I saw my first blood and I think forget I vomited.
Yeah.
But I thought I could still be the therapist that wears scrubs. Like that could be my thing.
Yeah.
But
I do have scrubs for pajamas. And sometimes when I will wear them, if someone comes over, they're like, well, Sean, are you trying to be like a medical? I'm like, dude, no, they're my
pajamas. Okay. Honestly, a transition into a serious question is, so when someone yells on a plane and somebody's having a heart attack, is there a doctor? Do you have to say, yes, but technically
the caveats.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like a need
no,
to do that?
No. Okay. Well, I can talk with them about how they're feeling as they, are on the floor.
Yeah.
Outside of that.
That's nice, right? Okay. So I want to get in a little bit into your background, and I really am curious. There's a couple of things. When I was looking at your CV, one of the things I'm impressed by is it sounds like you've done a fair amount of work on like evidence-based models of therapy versus what? I mean,
I've done a lot of work on looking at is there really such a thing as an evidence-based theory?
Wow, okay.
And really, they're yes and no. No meaning it's not the theory that makes therapy work so much. Like we used to think that the theory was the equivalent of the medicine, the pill, or the surgery in medicine, for example.
Yeah.
But really, it's more so the therapist and the way the therapist manifests the theory and brings those ideas into the therapy room, which to most your average client who hasn't had therapy training is like, well, yeah, duh.
Right.
I mean, I don't choose a theory. I choose a therapist.
Sure.
But for us in the therapy world who spend so much time focusing on training theory, it was sort of a big deal.
Okay. So. And as I get more of these episodes out, I think there are as many therapists that are listening as there are just regular people looking for advice or content. So I think that's fascinating because I like to give that speech when I get a new client of, if you don't feel a connection, you can move on and find another therapist it won't hurt my feelings. And that's part of the business. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in the back of my mind, I always think, okay, but we've got to do some evidence-based work. So I'm not just throwing out these pop psychology views of therapy.
Right.
I mean, so you're saying the modality or that's still important, but if that bond isn't there, it doesn't really matter what you're doing.
Yeah. The bond needs to be there. There do need to be certain things you're doing a certain problems, right? Like anxiety, there are certain sort of things that tend to work better than others, or depression or whatever. But it's the bond. It's who you are as a therapist. It's who your client is. Like, how hard are they wanting to work, or that type of thing. It's the fit between the two of you. Like, you can be a great therapist and they can be a great client, but they're not, the blend isn't there.
Yeah.
I'm the same as you. I tell people, hey, it's not, this isn't a personal thing. It's about finding a fit here.
So. Do you find that there are clients though, where you feel like a few sessions in and you can kind of tell that they don't want to disappoint you, or that they don't want to necessarily, you know, let you know that they kind of didn't do the homework because they don't want to let you down? Or do you ever feel that?
Sure. Yeah. And we usually, I always talk about it. Yeah. Bring it up. Hey, what, you know, and in that case, it's like, okay, well, it's probably the wrong homework. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Do you feel, I mean, have you had that experience where someone has disappeared from your schedule and you have, you know, I don't know, heard that they've gone somewhere else?
Yeah. A few times, you know, more often I will have, someone will just not come back, and you tend to be more, I'm like, oh man, I must have done something wrong or whatever.
Right.
And a few times, I've been practicing here for like 11 years now, I think. And so you see people over a long period of time, and though someone will come back like a year later who I thought I had done bad work with or something,
right.
They were disappointed, but they're like, no, it was great. We got what we needed. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. It's a complete like shift of what I thought.
Okay. So, I love that. I had an experience recently where someone said to me, I wish I could think of the specifics, but he basically said, I hadn't seen him in a while. And he's like, you know, that thing you talked about with, you know, I don't know, tugging on my ear every time I heard the word, whatever, that changed my life. And I'm thinking, I don't think that was me, you know, I don't think I say that, or I don't think that was part, it wasn't really that, but I don't think whatever he, whatever he was saying was pretty far from kind of something I think I would do or say.
Mm-hmm.
And so first of all, I'm grateful that it worked and that he attributed it to me.
Sure.
Right. But then I also kind of makes me think often, have you ever had that experience where someone tells you things that they are grateful that you taught them that you didn't teach them?
I have had that more than once.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes I will ask at the end of therapy, like, what did you get out of it? You know, what are the highlights, the low light points, that type of thing. And all often, probably about half the time, you'll say, oh, I love that when we were talking about whatever, and they misunderstood what I was saying.
Yeah, I mean, can you think of any examples? I know that's kind of putting you on the spot.
Not off the top of my head, but I used to try to sort of correct them, but then I would say, oh, yeah, great. You know, so a lot of my wisdom I've never actually said.
That's pretty funny. It'd be great to have like a Twitter account of things I didn't really teach.
That
were monumental. I have this, my last, I think, episode was on what I call the emotional baseline theory.
Yes.
And I'm one of those, when I have somebody that is, you know, so clinically depressed, they don't want to even get out of bed.
Right.
If I can find that reading a novel or maybe even playing a video game or something might get them to do something.
Yeah.
That one has backfired on me a couple of times where then a mother of a teenager has said, so I just paid, you know, whatever. And you basically just said, hey, play video games.
Play more video games.
Yeah. And part of me is like, well, kind of, but no. And right.
There's a bigger picture here.
Exactly.
That can happen too. Sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I, you know, where do we start with your background? There's a lot of things that I'm interested in, but you know, you went to school, maybe start us with where'd you get your undergrad, your graduate degree, and what got you into therapy? I mean, was this something that as a kid, you were that guy who everybody opened up to, or?
Yeah. Oddly enough, and that's such a basic therapist story, right? But it really is true. Yeah, for me, I was the kid that that people liked to talk to, going on into college, very much the same. I always felt like I had kind of an intuitive understanding of what was going on with people, and so. Yeah, didn't know quite what to do. I was going to be a wildlife biologist for a while.
Okay, what led that? I mean,
I grew up in a really tiny town in the mountains, so I just loved nature, loved wildlife, that type of thing. But then I realized, it's tough to make a living that way. And so anyway, one thing led to another, and ended up as a therapist. And love it.
When you went into college, were you already set? Were you intent on that?
When I started my sophomore year, I was, yes. My freshman year, I kind of hopped around with different things.
Okay.
So.
And even before we move forward there, it's funny how you said, isn't that every therapist story? So do you have any thoughts on why? Why are there these people that everybody goes to, you know, and everybody opens up to? I mean, you know, you kind of mentioned you feel like you have this ability to have a bigger picture, or
yeah, just kind of sense what's going on. I don't know. I think different careers attract different personality types. Mm-hmm. And this is, as you know, it's a hard career. I mean, you listen to heavy stuff all day long and for year after year. And so it's, yeah, I don't know. I think it does take a certain personalities are drawn that are drawn to that.
Yeah. I do think it's fun too, when you hear, and you know, better than anyone, that, we're not here to just tell people what to do,
right.
But I will find people that sometimes tell me, you know, I really should have been a therapist because I am great at giving out advice. Right?
Yes.
And that's from, I always think, not so much.
Right? Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So, all right. So you decide your sophomore year, this is your career, the career for you. So what does that path look like at that point?
So I go in, I start my master's program, and it turns out it is much harder than I realized.
Okay, yeah, where were you at?
I was at Brigham Young University in Utah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, much more difficult than I realized in terms of I never realized how much, okay, it's one thing to be able to listen to someone and to kind of be a good listener. It's a whole nother thing to be able to intervene with a family, let's say. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say the family looks exactly like mine that I grew up in, and I was finding myself going back into the same roles that I fit into growing up, and some were good, some were not, and so it's like as a therapist it was hard. I realized, wow, I've got to do a lot of personal work here too. It's not just like sit and listen and have fun. I have to go through a lot of the changes that I'm asking my clients to go through. And that was tough. And there were two times in my master's program, I remember I actually had the paperwork filled out. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. This
really?
Is way too crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it part of, I mean, I remember when I started my master's program, they said, this will change you. I mean, regardless,
yes.
No matter what you think, it will change you. And I thought, yeah, not me. You know, I'm a little older. I got a little experience. I'm good.
Right.
You know, and then it's, you know, I think when I'm sobbing into a pillow one night, childhood, I'm thinking, okay, fair enough. You know,
yes.
So was there a moment like that that had that paperwork?
There were a couple of those moments, and it is hard. It was much harder than I realized. It gets, good change is good change, right? So the things I needed to go through were good for me. But it was hard. It gave me a lot of empathy now for clients going through their own things.
Yeah. And were you married at the time?
I was married. We had a kid.
Okay.
And I was young,
yeah.
You know, like 23, 24.
Wow.
So married. We had one kid by then. We had another one on the way. And so.
Did your wife ever comment? Did she notice these changes?
Yes. She, well, at first she was like my therapist voice.
Okay.
You know, we'd start an argument, get arguing or something. She's like, turn off that therapist voice.
Oh, yes.
I'm like,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah,
whatever. So it was rough, but figuring out how it all, you know, because you get pretty heady in your master's program too. Like, I know all this stuff now, and let me go home and like fix people.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I felt like almost every class I took was wait a minute, this is all about my mom, right? And then the next one, I'm thinking, so now, you know, it's really the family systems. And you don't realize you're bringing home to your family. Let me experiment this on us now. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did you kind of have that similar experience?
I have. And it never once went well.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
that's a fair point.
Yeah, I learned that. And I tell my students now, at Alliant, I tell them all the time, I'm like, whatever relationship you are in now,
mm-hmm.
you are not going to be in the same one by the time you're done with this program.
Mm.
It may be with the same person, but it's not going to look the same.
Gotcha.
It's going to be really different. And hopefully by the end of it, you'll realize how much you are part of the problem.
Okay. Right.
Cause
yeah.
It's easy. You know, for me at first I was like, wow, here's all this stuff wrong with my spouse as I'm learning all this stuff or my kids or whoever. Right.
Yeah.
But then near the end, when it finally started to settle into it, I was like, wait a minute. That's actually stuff wrong with me. Like, it's not so much them. It's like me. I could do this work.
Yeah.
And so I need to work on that.
So did you have some, in your master's program, did you start mm-hmm. seeing clients at that time?
I did. Yeah. We started about 2 months in.
Wow.
So it was really quick.
Do you remember some of the first clients and what that was like?
I remember them very, very well. In
okay.
fact, I often think of them and wonder how they're doing. You know, it's been 17 years now, I think,
wow.
since then. But
what comes
yeah.
to mind? What are some of the situations?
Yeah. Well, remember a lady, I don't want to go too specifically, obviously, but just a lot of couples. I started working with couples
early and that's on. Actually what I was kind of curious. I mean, I didn't even want to touch a couple for a long time. So I was curious. So you got into working
my first, with couples right away. My first 10 or 20 clients were all couples. Wow. Yeah. So I started doing that, which was sort of baptism by fire.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine what that was like. Yeah, did you feel like more of a referee at that point? Or
I had no clue. I remember my first couple was very reserved, quiet, sort of more conflict avoidant type. And I was very much more involved teaching them skills on and on and on. And it didn't work very well because they needed to sort of come out. And then my second client was very intense, couple arguing like crazy. And then being too involved didn't work. So I'll be more passive. And so then I just sat there and they fought for like 15 minutes. Yeah. So I'm sorry if any of my initial clients are listening, but come back. I'll
there you go.
Give you a freebie.
I think back in terms of when you would hear some of these interventions that I would think in these moments where I had no confidence in them of, bring a talking stick in or whatever. I'm like, this couple, they'll hit each other if they have a stick. Right. And that's all that stuff of that you did in the role plays kind of goes out the window.
Yes. Right? I remember trying every little thing we'd learn in class that day. All right, I'm going to go try this one. And so it's but honestly, I think there was so much, in some ways, some of my best work was just because you care so much and you're so invested. And so like, I can still remember to this day their names and what they were up to and all that. So
I think that's fascinating. I remember, I really feel like there was one point when I was at a nonprofit I was working for and I maybe got a tiny bit behind on some of my paperwork and I had to go back and look at all these old files and I was shocked at how you can remember them so well.
Yes.
Right.
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun. Every now and then I'll reflect on how many people here in this valley I know and have been honored enough to be kind of invited into their lives, and it's humbling. Really. Yeah. It's wild. It's very humbling.
So let's move on into your PhD program. So because this is the part I'm interested as well. Is that where when you were in Kentucky?
Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech. Yes. Okay.
Blacksburg, Virginia. The Appalachian Mountains. So went there for 2 years. Went from there on to did a postdoc at University of Kentucky.
Okay. I saw that Kentucky in there and I was just kind of curious. Yes. So you know, you're... What was that experience like? I mean, do we have good old stereotypes coming in?
See, Lexington, where I was, is very, very cosmopolitan, very sort of like any other big city. A lot of fun. We really liked it, but it would get interesting when we had a few camping trips that would go south. Fast. Well, one guy, I was not expecting about this, but that's all right. We were talking, we pull up to a campground. And there's a big sign that says, "Welcome NASCAR fans weekend." Like, all right, I can, whatever, NASCAR, okay. And this is deep in Kentucky, right?
Okay.
I'm like, this is interesting. So we pull up to a camp, the only camp spot that is free in the whole place. And we're driving through everyone's like big, keggers, and no one is wearing many clothes. And it's like, this is interesting. And so we find a picnic table, and we have three kids at this point.
Okay.
And there's this dirty old towel on the table. So we're like, perfect. And we set up our camp and someone comes roaring in and skidding into our campground and get out of my, all sorts of stuff. Oh. And we're like, this isn't yours. And he's like, I was saving it with that towel. I'm like, this towel, this is like, you can't even tell it's a towel. It's like a pile of mold. Anyway, so there was almost a big fight and everyone comes over and like, get out of there. And so we left.
Oh gosh. Okay.
So don't, if it's NASCAR fans weekend, let it ride.
Stay away. And lesson learned. Moldy towel does.
That ride too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. Everybody needs one in the back of their car. Maybe before they gotta claim their stakes.
I didn't know that.
Exactly. And then, so then you from Kentucky then, is that when you move back to California or not back to California? You're not from California.
I'm not from California. Yeah, wife is. I'm from Utah. I got a job at Alliant. I had always really liked Alliant and been impressed with what they do. So got a job here and was excited to come out.
Okay. So that takes you in. I want to talk a little bit about before we do that.
Okay.
We are about to do the very first live advertisement I've ever done in my entire life.
Yeah.
So you've listened to a couple of podcasts.
I have.
Right? So you know that my podcasts are typically sponsored by Eli's Extracts. Mm-hmm. So we're talking organic, all natural shaving cream, mm-hmm. head, legs, face, you name it. right?
Perfect.
And so what I did is I the fine folks at Eli's sent me, we've got two tubs of Antigua. We have the shave cream, and we also have the leg and body shave cream. Mm-hmm. So they are both yours today.
Nice.
But I want to do a open it and smell it.
Okay.
Live on the podcast.
Perfect. I was driving, right, listening to you as I drove down yesterday, and I heard that you got some of this in.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
It's amazing. I shaved my head with it this morning, as nice. You can probably tell.
I can.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Mm.
What's the word?
Very mild, but relaxing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that's a
black
slogan.
One?
Okay.
What's that one?
This one is just good old shaving cream.
Okay. Just regular.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay. This is the white one.
Yeah.
Mmm. Coconutty.
Really? Okay.
Yes, I like it.
All right.
Relaxing.
Okay. Those both are both yours.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And if anybody goes to elis-extracts.com, coupon code virtualcouch, all one word, 25% off their entire order. You know, it's kind of
fantastic.
Funny, the dash, right? That needs to be there, or else then it looks like it's a bad word. I don't know if you ever noticed
yeah,
that.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, I see it.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
No,
exactly.
Very good.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, well done. And I guess before we kind of move on, I also have one bit, and this could go south. So, on one of the episodes a couple of weeks ago, I shared that I had a client that was very frustrated that I did not know the term clinical lycanthropy, which turns out to be, of course, and I'm sure you've run into this plenty in your practice, but where people feel like they want to turn into werewolves. I mean, is that a pretty common thing that you...
Weekly.
Okay, right, okay. So this client was so surprised, I did not know that I dug out my Dictionary of Psychology. I blew the dust off. I bought this as soon as I was going to go back to grad school and then never opened it.
Yeah.
So it has had one use so far. So I kind of thought it would be fun to see. I mean, you are a doctor. You are you teach at a university. You lecture. You've got 21 pages worth of research and books and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I will start flipping this open, Sean.
Okay.
You just give me a stop, and I'm going to go down a page, and you're going to give me a stop. And I want to see if you know what that word is. You can use it in a sentence and feel very confident.
Are
you ready?
That's a thick book. All right.
All right. Ready?
Yeah, we'll see.
Set. Can you tell me when?
Go. Stop.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Hold on. Okay. And
stop.
Oh, all right. Okay. This is good. This is good. Ganser's syndrome. G-A-N-S-Z-E-R-S. Ganser's syndrome.
Ganser's syndrome. I have no clue what Ganser's syndrome
is. Never heard of that as well.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, okay.
Have you?
No. Oh, good. Goodness gracious, no. I don't think I've heard of half of these things. Or not, no, not even close. All right. And this is one you'll probably never use in your entire life.
Good.
Are you ready? A fictitious disorder or pseudopsychosis in which there is a voluntary production of often severe psychological symptoms. Typically, these are worse when the patient is cognizant of being observed. The displayed symptoms are almost always a reflection of the patient's own concept of some disorder and rarely conform to recognized diagnostic criteria. The syndrome is often seen among prisoners and army draftees who seek consciously or otherwise to receive special treatment by virtue of their disorder.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah. So when they're being observed, they create some...
Yeah,
some
yeah. I wonder why, though, it's more with military prisoners, army
draftees.
I don't know.
Which
you actually have some, is there a book or you've done some research that has to do with the military?
A little bit. Yeah. But I was thinking more like sometimes husbands will get that when they're having to go to couples. Got cancers. Yeah.
Okay. That is brilliant. Yes, they do. Very, very observable symptoms, right? Yeah. That they do not want to be there. Okay. So let's move on. I want to hear more, and then we'll leave the bulk of the time to really talk about what couples therapy looks like and your thoughts on it. So how do you like teaching? What's that like for you?
No, I love it. And yeah, I love it. Love it. In fact, it's basically just storytelling that you get paid for, you know?
Wow.
And so I had a sabbatical. I'm just coming off a year-long sabbatical from university, and it was great, but I missed teaching so much. I got once to guest lecture at a place in Berkeley during sabbatical, and it was like, you know, taking a big long drink of water after a marathon or something. It was so nice.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I love it. A lot of fun. I do teach a lot. I've been teaching for a long time.
Okay. What classes do you teach?
Right now I teach couples therapy.
Okay.
I teach the intro theory course.
Uh-huh.
I teach different levels of couples therapy, the advanced and the beginning.
Mm.
I teach the psychopathology, so diagnoses, which I miss Ganser's. So
here's your challenge. Can you work that into a class in the next few days?
For sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll report back. Yeah.
Okay.
Over time I've taught about everything we offer. I've taught sex therapy. I've taught parent-child, like working with kids, that type of thing.
Okay.
So
I already want to request to have you back to even talk about some of these other things.
If that would sure. Work. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And then, and forgive me right now, but I want to, in advance, I know that, when you came in, we were looking that you have this, you get to see the window, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I'm about to, I want to go completely deep dive into couples therapy, but if I see something that would be kind of fun to comment on, you'll forgive my ADD moment?
No, please do. And I have window stories as well.
So do you really?
Yeah.
Do you want to share one of those first?
Yeah. So
okay.
It must be, because I have a window much like yours.
Okay.
And the other day, I'm sitting there doing therapy, and the client was sitting just like in here with their back to the window,
okay.
But I'm looking at them and beyond out the window, and there's a big black crow sitting there in this bush
right behind him.
And it's just sitting there staring, and the topic of conversation was also like pretty dark and heavy.
Oh.
And after a while I said, look, I'm sorry, I've got to, because I'm aware, like I try to be aware of my nonverbals, right? And
sure.
I'm like, something's got to be off with me because I'm looking at a crow. I'm like, I'm sorry, hold on, look behind you. And she looks, I'm like, and she's like, yeah, I wondered what was going on. Like, and
she could tell.
Yeah, something was off. So big pro. And it sat there for like two or three clients and then flew off.
Okay. Do you read more into that, Sean?
Well, no. We grew up around the Native Americans a lot. And
okay.
So I'm like, I know crows mean something. I can't remember what, but
yeah. I want another one too. These are so good.
Yeah.
So Halloween, we're recording this a few days after Halloween.
Okay.
And I had there's a couple of companies in my building that dressed up. And
yep.
So I had the privilege of watching Waldo on the phone in front of my window, just fired up, angry,
okay.
And very angry Waldo. And
okay.
And I recorded Waldo just for my family group.
Entertainment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I've never seen Waldo so angry.
Yeah.
I knew where he was, you know, and I think anybody would have been
upset.
He was very
upset. You should have brought him in.
Yeah, exactly. That's not a bad idea. All right, do you have another good, I love this, window stories?
I've had a turkey do the same thing as the crow. Like,
okay.
Why, you know, we have wild turkeys.
Yeah,
right?
I see when I run and all kinds
it's
of stuff.
It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a turkey do the same thing. But they do the head bob, you
uh-huh.
know, the turkeys, and he kept head bobbing, like trying to look in. And so I'm like, this is weird.
So you have kids, right?
Yeah.
Were you ever a fan of the movie Chicken Run?
I wouldn't say fan, but I've seen
okay.
it.
Okay. My favorite line in that was the older couple said the chickens are organized, right?
Right.
So it sounds like that turkey kind of really knew what was going on.
It did feel sort of like a reconnaissance runner, like something's up here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
right.
I think I closed the blinds with him, actually.
Okay. Well, I'll have to hear more about that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got a good 20 minutes or so left, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So tell me, I really want to hear your thoughts on couples therapy and why,
yeah.
you know, why are people hesitant to come in and what keeps them engaged and what do you think causes them
sure.
to run away and what are the things you see? You go.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll start with why are they hesitant to come in? I think the big one is just not knowing what to expect and fear of, I mean, most of us, we have our arguments with our spouse and the last thing we want to do is have more of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I'm going to go into therapy. I'm going to sort of give over control of how this plays out. And this could go really south. And so a lot of people will wait until it's sort of beyond what they feel like they can handle on their own. And they're like, I realize I can't do this myself, ourselves.
Yeah.
And so then they'll come in. But it takes a lot. I mean, I was thinking of this morning, actually, what all goes into a couple coming into therapy. They have to first both agree on it, which is a lot in general. Like, think of that conversation as tough. Then they have to agree on who they go to see and then find schedule.
It's true.
It's a lot of work. So I have a lot of respect for people that take that, that are brave enough to go for it.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that. I mean, even that could be then, it could be months, really,
yes.
right? Or
yes.
even if someone's been harboring this desire to go,
mm-hmm.
it could be years. And I think we probably both run into that.
All the time, yeah. I will have a very common for me, one member of this couple wants to come in and it takes years to convince the other one to come in. So,
yeah.
yeah.
I just a real quick thought on that. I just had a couple where, and I think maybe, I'm sure you've gotten this as well,
mm-hmm.
and when she's contacting me to come in, she even let me know that this is to kind of renew some skills or that
sure,
sort of thing.
Sure,
and
sure.
of course, my mind is like, hey, whatever you have to say to
yes.
get in here, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I was impressed. It really was. I mean, it was,
yeah.
they're in a pretty good spot, but it
yeah.
was, it was just really nice. Kind of just gave them some new skills, and, yes. and it was a pretty, you know, basically quick process.
Yes.
And what my thought was with that was, I wish more people would just come in before, like you say, it gets to this place where it's about to explode.
Yes. I've had, I would say maybe one out of every 20 couples I see is like that. And it's nice because they usually do. It's very proactive. But even for those that have exploded, I always tell my couples, there are three things. And so even if you're like on the brink of divorce, there are three things. If you have, we will make this work.
Okay.
It's one of them is a commitment. If you're both committed to making this, to staying together.
Okay.
And if you're communication, so if you're willing to like talk about what's going on, like to put it out there, you don't have to be very eloquent. That's part of what you're paying me for is to help you bring it out and to say it. But if you're willing to be transparent about what's going on with you, and then the other one is humility, meaning if you're willing to sort of look at yourself and do whatever changes you need to do, if those three things are there, we can make it through anything.
Okay.
Like, and you'll be fine. It may be hard. It'll probably be, depending on what's gone on, you know, if there's a lot of betrayals or affairs or whatnot, it'll probably be some of the most excruciating days of your life, but we will make it.
Okay.
And so.
It's interesting. And I love that, those three. So do you feel like if someone, have you ever had somebody just say, I'm not committed, but I'm here because.
Yes.
Okay.
And some people are like, I don't know if I'm committed or not. And that's fine.
Okay.
You know, I'll take people wherever they are. And so it's like, that's fine. You don't have to be committed, or maybe some days you are and some days you're not. And we can talk through that too. We'll just figure that out. We can't really start couples therapy until you're committed, but there is a discernment counseling, it's called, where you're working with a couple as they're deciding what to do.
Okay.
Should we head with this or not?
Okay. So. And so and sometimes you're doing that before then you really lock in and engage with a couples therapy.
Exactly.
Okay. So I like that. I think that if somebody's listening right now, I would imagine there are some people that think, look, if I'm not sure I even want this to work, why would I go in and try to fix it?
Yes. And okay. Some people are afraid if I go in, it's just going to make it worse. We're just going to talk about, you know, drag all these skeletons out of the closet. And I say, to be honest, in the short term, that's probably true. I use the analogy of a wound. Like, let's say you got a really bad wound, a cut or something, and all you do is just sort of like wrap it up and try to pretend it's not there. It's going to get infected. It's going to hurt. And when it does come time to actually fix it, the initial like spraying out of that thing is not going to feel good.
Yeah.
But long term, it will.
Okay.
So. Short term, couples therapy doesn't always feel good for the first couple weeks. Sometimes it does, but almost, you know, usually it does end up, getting better.
So when you get a couple in then and they say, okay, fine, we're committed. Do you kind of give them even a time frame to say, look, for the next, whatever, we got to just do all we can for this? Or are you just, the assumption is if you're here and you're committed, you are in.
It depends. I usually just sort of assess commitments kind of on my own as I'm meeting with them. But if it's clear, like let's say there was an affair or something that happened or one of them has been trying too long to get the other one to change and they're leaning out of the marriage at this point, then we have an explicit conversation about commitment. You know, we're and not in like a shaming way, you should be committed, just where are you? Let's see where you are, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. So you know, I've actually heard of a couple of folks that have gone to you, and it's been very, very good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you know, not
that's
of course,
good to know.
Right? It is, and it's and it's made me feel like a champ referring people.
Thank you.
But I do feel like from what the feedback I've heard is that you know you really are pretty. You know, you're kind of like, hey, here's the reality of what we're dealing with. So there's not a lot of dancing around, wasting people's time. I mean,
no.
Okay.
I hop right in. My philosophy is you're paying me to tell you what I think.
Okay.
I tend to believe in people. I believe that people can make changes to make their life better. And it's my job to sort of help you, to put out what I think those are, at least.
Okay. So is this too ambiguous of a question to say then, with that said, what do you think is at the core or at the heart of most of the couples that come in and see you? What's at the core of the problem?
Oh, wow. Boy. That's a good
question. And it might be too ambiguous.
No. That's fair. I think at the core is... So can I make a book plug?
Please.
And this is not, I get like no royalties from this or anything. It's just a book I really love, but it's super obscure. It's called Leadership and Self-Deception.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic. I've given out dozens of them.
Okay.
But anyway, that they talk in that book about this idea that we tend to, we start to objectify people rather than to view them as humans.
Okay.
And so I would say one thing at the core for a lot of people is you start to view your spouse as an object, meaning you view them primarily as, are they making me happy? Is this a thing that makes me happy? Do they make me unhappy, et cetera? Rather, and if it's happy, I'll be nice. I'll go towards them. If it's unhappy, I'll go away from them. Are they meeting my needs, so to speak?
Wow.
Whereas in reality, if you view them as a person whose needs and desires are every bit as real as your own, I mean, they didn't roll out of bed and say, I really want to, how can I screw up my partner's life today?
Okay.
You know, if you view them as your job is to meet their needs as much as possible, to help them get where they want to go, that type of thing, you have far fewer problems.
So okay.
I think that's one thing at the core. There's probably a lot of things.
Well, and that one too, I like, I mean, I'm kind of hearing the, then it's the, can that person be vulnerable? Is that difficult for them too? Do they have their own experiences of vulnerability that were shut down?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see a lot? I mean, I feel like, you know, and I want to hear what your thoughts are, but I feel like a lot of men have trouble in particular with vulnerability.
Yes. In fact, all my couples work involves helping people open up more, and almost always a dynamic that I see very, very common. The wife wants to come in for couples therapy. The husband has not been excited about it for a long time, but finally agrees to come. And then the husband will realize, hey, this isn't so bad. I can actually talk. It's not a ganging up against me. I can share what I'm feeling. He seems to understand me, like, and the wife too.
Yeah.
But the wife's, women in my experience tend to have more of that in their personal lives than men do. And so then sometimes what happens is the woman is like, wait a minute, let's not do that. You know,
right, yeah.
Be careful what you wish for, right?
But, sure.
Men do have a hard time being vulnerable. We're not conditioned to, we're not trained to. It's seen as weak. Mm. But one of my things that I say to people is there's nothing stronger than vulnerability. I mean, look at what you have to do to not be vulnerable. It's a lot of work.
That's interesting. It is, right?
Yeah.
Kind of put up all these walls and barriers and check myself all the time. And,
yeah, it's exhausting. Just tell people what you're about. You know, just let it out there.
Yeah. Okay, so, and along with vulnerability, I think is the other cliched phrase coming from my mouth is authenticity.
Sure.
So do you feel like a lot of times that's even a struggle where somebody, and I mean, I find that at times someone in the relationship maybe has changed or different thoughts or opinions or views, and now they're scared of being vulnerable to talk about what they think is the authentic them.
Yes, definitely. And then especially in my experience, when someone has been involved with something that they're feeling secretive about or feeling ashamed of, or if someone just feels a fair amount of shame in general, they have a hard time being authentic and vulnerable, which, as you've spoken about on here, I know is really the main antidote to feeling ashamed, that type of thing. And so I will walk people through, if I have a husband struggling with pornography, let's say, or I don't work so much with pornography, but I, or like with an affair or something, wives too, in this case. I will say, hey, it's better to even just say, hey, I'm feeling really weak right now. Today's a weak day for me.
Yeah.
I really need to check. Can I check in with you more than usual or something? Paradox. It seems in the short run, like, no way. Why would I say that? You know, I'm hopping into a meat grinder there. But almost always their spouse is like, yes, I would much rather hear that than you not say anything. Yes, I might get mad. I might get hurt. But you know, you can endure that. Like, that'll be like 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Know? Yeah.
So
do you have kind of and do you have people approach you and say, you know, hey, what can I do to improve my marriage or those kind of things? Do you have some good old go-to?
Some regular advice.
Yeah.
Yes. You may have heard of the five love languages. That book is out there. It's great. The idea behind that is figure out what says I love you to your spouse, and start doing it.
Okay.
Period. Pretty easy.
For those who are familiar with that, what are your love languages? I mean, what do you?
What are mine? I'm a words of affirmation guy. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm not a gifts guy at all. You could never buy me a gift ever.
Okay.
Although the antique
from Eli's Plugs
is fantastic, and I'm excited about that. That's a big one. Just doing nice things for your spouse.
Okay.
How well do you know them? Like, how well do you know what's on their minds today? How hard are you working to try to help their life go better? Mm-hmm. That type of thing. And honestly, just opening up and talking.
Okay. Do you find that, let me kind of rephrase this. So you've got a couple in there, the first session, you're kind of putting them at ease, you're making sure they're committed. Do you give them homework that first session, or is it kind of depend, or do you have some pretty go-to homework?
It depends. On some people really like it, other people don't.
Yeah.
And so I just try to get a read of the clients and if what they are like.
So if a couple, if you feel like there isn't as much connection as you would like to see, do you have any
go-tos?
Yeah.
In those cases, a lot of times it is just going out on dates, doing those, having fun, starting to have fun together. Honestly, here in the suburbs, Roseville, where we live, mm-hmm. you know, Lincoln, Rockland area, these people are so incredibly busy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's honestly so many of my problems. I've had this conversation endlessly also with myself.
Yeah.
You know, we're too busy.
Yeah, overscheduled.
Overscheduled, over for what, you know?
Yeah.
And what at what cost? It's too big of a cost.
I know it's a total cliche, but at the end of your life, right, are you going
to
say, man, I worked a lot, right?
I know. I wish we could just collectively as a community say, hey, can we all agree that, like, half this crap doesn't even matter?
Yeah.
Stop doing it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, have barbecues together or, like, just chill.
Yeah. And I know you have so many irons in the fire between, so you have, you're teaching, you have your practice, and then you also have interns at your practice?
Yes. Well, not interns anymore. I have licensed therapists.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I have one intern. Yeah. Licensed therapist.
Okay.
Here in Palo Alto.
Oh, and now, okay. I have seen you post some things about that. What is that like to have a satellite location? How often are you down there? Is that more difficult than you think? Or
no, it's great. I have someone down there that I really trust and who does really good work.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, and there's very much a need for her skill set down there. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
It's fine.
Yeah. So are there other – give me an idea. I know you're familiar far more with the pioneers of couples therapy. And,
yes.
And when I first got into therapy, I was a big Gottman fan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think, what does he say that he can tell in the first session within, what, is it 15 minutes that he thinks or he can
– Yeah, he can predict – he can watch a couple argue for 5 minutes.
Okay.
And predict with 93% accuracy whether they'll be divorced within 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It really is. I don't know. Do you feel like over time, do you start to kind of get a little bit of that same sense?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, my challenge now is usually after the first session, I can have a pretty good sense of where this is going to go.
Mm.
But my challenge is going at their pace.
Yeah.
You know? Like, okay. Yes. And just sort of reminding myself, Sean, slow down.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that your friends have said, yeah, he's really direct, and that's probably true. And I have to remind myself, you may know where it's going, but, you know, it's their journey, their process. So, like, go slow.
Well, that's funny and it's even funny how our minds work, right? I've tried to do a little bit on my podcast about mindfulness and where our thoughts can go. And so even that when you heard that you feel direct, did your mind go to this, I need to slow down? I
mean, it did.
And it's not funny, in my mind, I thought, man, I need to be more direct because I feel like at times I am not, you know.
Direct enough.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So maybe we could meet in the middle.
There's a constant recalibration, right?
Yeah. I remember, and I think I've even said this on here too, that when I first started in grad school, one of my teachers said that beware of the day where then you basically feel like when someone walks in, you do know the script, and if they don't follow it.
Yes.
Do you ever feel that?
I do, and I remind myself of that all the time. I'm like, just maybe Sean, you knowing how this is going to play out just means you've like prematurely like foreclosed on a story.
Okay.
And so you have to be really genuinely open to new stuff here.
Mm.
Just because you've been working with couples for like 17 years really doesn't mean you do know how this is going
to
play out.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, though, do you feel like you've kind of heard everything at least a few times?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Every now and then something will surprise me. I used to say, oh, I've seen it all. Nothing will surprise. But then every now and then I do get sideswiped with something.
Yeah. You know? And of course, I know confidentiality is such our business. But if there's anything that comes to mind, you know, like I get clinical lycanthropy dropped in my lap, you know.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that one, you know.
No, I haven't ever heard that one either.
Yeah. But anything that, you know, where you think, wow, okay.
Yeah.
The
biggest thing that threw me in the past several years was for a while I worked with several celebrity clients and someone called and was like, hey, hello. I just answered the phone like usual. And they're like, hey, this is my name. And I didn't catch their name at first. And so they, it was noisy or something. So we just continued on with the conversation. And then they could tell, I think, that I didn't know who they were. And because I was just talking as normal. And then at the end, they said, no, do you know who I am? And I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh. It did surprise me.
Yeah.
That caught me because I'm used to thinking of surprises coming from like the extremities of someone's story, right?
Exactly.
Not from just sort of who they are. And so that threw me.
Yeah.
Was
that when they did end up being a good experience?
It was fine. Yeah. It ended up being great. But yeah. I did have to sort of like talk, you know, you talk yourself through if you're starting to have an extreme reaction. And so I started like, okay, Sean, just normal, just do it like everything else.
Well, I think that is powerful though, because I know these things, every time I set it off with, this is a cliche coming up, but I think people do say that, you know, it must be easy for them, right?
Right.
And I've had a chance to work with some people that are incredibly wealthy or maybe an athlete or like you say, a celebrity, a politician. And boy, real people and same problems. Yeah. And, you know, the guy who's worth $100 million still has struggles. And
absolutely.
And it'd be awesome struggles to have, right?
Yeah, No, it's very true. In fact, I've worked with people all across the spectrum and we're all struggling with some version of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, context is very different. Privilege is very different. But we all have troubles. One of my little mantras is, and this is kind of a negative way of saying it, but no one is worth envying.
Oh, okay.
Say this person has a ton of money and that looks nice. And having a ton of money probably would solve some of your problems. Legitimately.
Sure.
But you don't see the problems that come with that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of people I have that are super wealthy as clients are like, you know, it's really hard to know who to trust.
Yeah. Okay.
And questioning the motives of everyone in my life. And it's very lonely.
Yeah.
And so.
And if you're using, you know, money for toilet paper, the band on the $100 bills can kind of, right?
It's scratchy.
I mean, there's problems.
Yeah. It's counterfeit or not.
Right, exactly. Right. No, that is. I mean, the trust part of with the money in particular.
Yeah, and you can't just go down to the drive-in and grab a burger.
Yeah.
My point being, envy is just, it's wasted energy. Like, make what you have work, because whatever you have, I promise you, there's someone else that wishes they had it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Time went fast. I mean, I can't. We're already. Yeah, we're there, and you didn't even get to look in the snack closet. We didn't see anybody in the window, right?
Yeah, it was boring.
I know exactly. Yeah, it was very boring. Not on the window.
The window was
yes,
boring,
exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would love to have you back to maybe kind of talk about some of the other areas of expertise, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
At some point. Okay.
Sure.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. But that would be great. And any other kind of, I am curious if you have any, do you have any just kind of parting thoughts or things that you were hoping that you would be able to get to or things you love to just kind of put
out there?
I wanted
to talk about trust really quick.
Okay, please do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, because I've been working a lot lately with people rebuilding some trust.
Okay.
Maybe, you know, an affair or an addiction or something where trust has been ruptured. And so I've been having this conversation a lot. The main trust has two components.
Okay.
If you want to rebuild it. For one partner, it's being trustworthy.
Okay.
And for the other partner, it's being trusting.
Wow.
So if the trustworthy partner And usually that's when their trust was in question at one point, right? Their trustworthiness. They had the affair or whatever it was.
Sure.
So if they are being trustworthy, you know, the couples agree this is what trustworthiness looks like. And they're doing it. Mm. But the other person is not being trusting. You're going to have problems because the trustworthy partner is just going to get exhausted eventually. Like, I'm trying to climb this hill that I can never actually...
They feel like they never win.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So on the other hand, if the the trusting person is trusting, but the other one is not trustworthy, it's just an accident waiting to happen. You're going to get... And so I do talk with couples a lot about that, about how these things need to increase in tandem. You know, as their trustworthiness goes up, your trusting has to go up.
Okay.
And sometimes people who have been hurt, who didn't have the affair, let's say, they're hurt and they feel like they have no work to do. Like this, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
They have to do, and they will set up this like never ending obstacle course. To where you have to go through all of these things. And it's not really fair. Both have work to do, becoming more trusting and becoming more trustworthy.
How does that happen? What does that look like? I mean,
it'll vary by the couple, right? But it's the trustworthy, the couple usually figures out this is what I need to do to trust you again. Sometimes includes even as big as like moving neighborhoods or moving jobs or something sometimes, but usually smaller stuff like checking in often, letting me track you on your phone, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But then the trusting person just has to plain old take that leap sometime that, you know, yeah, you might get hurt here. They might be lying. There's a chance they are, but you are going to have to take that leap.
I love that. Oh, go ahead.
Trust your conscience.
Okay.
So,
and I'm thinking of a couple right now and where, when the person is literally, you know, I'll let you track me. I'll take pictures where I'm at. You bet. Whatever it takes.
Yes.
And then the partner is still saying, I cannot, I'm having a real hard time just moving past this. And I've started to kind of really encourage mindfulness practice there.
Yes.
That those feelings are normal, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what do we do with them? And how do you move them on through the brain?
Yes.
Instead of, I think right now, the partner wants to continually say, I'm still hurting,
right?
You know?
Sometimes the one who had the affair does need to show a little more remorse. Like if the person is like, I don't want to start trusting you, you don't actually seem very sorry.
Yeah.
Or you seem more concerned about getting out of the hot seat than in like atoning for this in any way.
I love that. I do. And then maybe this is one of those where I'm guilty of thinking ahead of what you're seeing in front of you. But I much like we were talking about Gottman can figure these things out in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. I do have a little bit of this when people come in and if the person who is the offender is willing to say anything we need to do, I think, okay,
exactly.
We're good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you see the one that's like, look, I confessed it and we don't need to dwell on it and it's not productive and I need to, you know.
Yes, I'm not seeing her anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts when you see that?
Well, I usually call it out right away.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, that's part of the point. But the other part of the point is you're primarily worried about your own emotional experience here.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
worried about you not being in trouble.
Yeah. Sounds like you're extremely direct.
Yes.
That is a callback. Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Sean Davis,
yes.
Thank you so much for coming in. I feel like we talked for 5 minutes, right? This was a blast.
I also feel, anyway.
Say, be vulnerable.
You're fair enough.
Fair enough.
Okay. I worry I haven't given you much. We've just chatted about turkeys and
bathrooms
and a little bit about couples.
But so. I think you'll be surprised. I think we got a good solid, you know, 5 minutes in there about couples. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I think
it was maybe 10.
I think it was more than that. But no, this was wonderful, though. And I think that even, you know, it's funny that you put it that way. Some of the best feedback I've gotten about this podcast, quite frankly, has been just that this is going to sound what a cliche to end on. You know, Sean, therapists are people too. You know, right? But I mean, but it is that there are people that are relatable and that, and that is going to be part of the experience coming in and that, you know, not every therapist is going to have the patches on their sleeves and the whatever smart glasses and the pipe and you're laying down. And because I do feel like that's part of the stigma, right? That these aren't people that I'll be able to relate to and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So if anything, you have just done the entire profession a great service.
The opposite. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I thank you for that. Right.
You're welcome.
Sorry. So I would, any, I feel like here's the part where I feel like we're doing this celebrity podcast. Anything you want to plug? You got any movies, books coming up? You know?
No, I don't actually. Okay. I write lots of books, but they're all for therapists.
And well, yeah, okay.
Your average listener would find them pretty boring.
You're selling yourself short, Sean.
Therapists know my books. Yeah.
Yeah. But I really appreciate you coming on. I would love to get you back on. And, you know, I've been in looking over your CV, maybe some of the things around anxiety, around depression, some of those things that are pretty hot topics too.
Absolutely.
Okay. And for anybody listening, please visit pathbackrecovery.com to learn more about how you can overcome pornography addiction, compulsive sexual behavior. And also you can find these episodes on virtualcouch.xyz. And every time I say XYZ, I want to finish with PDQ.
Okay.
That one goes back to you. But Sean, thanks for coming on. And I will see you next time on the Virtual Couch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Compressed emotions flying past, our heads and out the other end. The pressures of the daily grind is wonderful. Elastic waste and rubber ghost, I'm floating past the midnight hour. They push aside the things that matter most. It's wonderful. Understanding through to heal the legs and hearts you broke. The pain is wonderful.